Meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting," he replied. "Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do."
Afterwards, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. "I'm going out to fish," Simon Peter told them, and they said, "We'll go with you." So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, have you any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and he jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 meters. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have caught." So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, precisely 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Well, none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you were old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said to him, "Follow me."
Well, may the fourth be with you. And also with you. Come on. Thank you. For all the nerds in the group, it's Star Wars Day today. Thank you very much. That was my nod to that. Many moons ago in a galaxy far, far away, I worked for the Rebel Alliance, which was organized around a charismatic leader. But it wasn't the Rebel Alliance, obviously. No, I didn't work for Luke or Leia Skywalker. I worked for a charity, and the leader wasn't a Jedi. He was a guy called Patrick Regan, who was a bit of a famous Christian celebrity. And he was so charismatic that people would come to this charity to hear about what we did. They would give us money for our work because he was just a really good speaker and was able just to convey things in a really good way. And they would read his books about what we did and email me and ask questions. And we as an organization were built around this guy, this Patrick. Patrick, there's some nodding going on. One of my colleagues is in the congregation, so there's some nodding going on about what's going on in sermon. So you can talk to Phil about this charity afterwards if you really want to. And because he was a charismatic leader, because he was really good at publicizing what we did, he received an OBE. And we would say in meetings, this isn't his OBE, this is all of our OBE. But none of our names were on the OBE. No one ever was like, Chris, so you've got 1/20th of an OBE. No. No, I haven't. It's funny, when you have a really charismatic leader, how things can revolve around them, and they do things for the right and the good. Patrick was a fervent Christian, is a fervent Christian, built the organization on faith and principles of Christianity, and we did our youth work from that place, from prayer, from a real sense of justice and liberation, and a move to see things change for people who generally didn't get a chance. But from the outside, often, what people would see was him, and they would follow him. Now, when Patrick left, I left just before him, everyone genuinely worried that the charity would fold, that we wouldn't make enough money anymore because he did so much to raise enough money. The current CEO leader is a very different kind of leader, one who organizes well, who takes breaks more often, has a bit more of a work-life balance, let me say. From what I've been told, I don't work for him. So you get the sense that people were really worried because they lost kind of that light in the center. Now, you've probably already worked out what I'm trying to say. This is the low Sunday after Bridget's leaving. Last week we had over 300 people in here. It was overwhelming. And now we are back to us. It is bank holiday weekend. Lots of people have gone away. But we are the ones left to think about what it looks like once our charismatic leader has left. In the gospel, what happens is the disciples revert back to type. These were fishermen and people who did normal things. And Jesus had pulled them out of their roles, out of their place in society, and put them in the center of the liberation of humanity. He put them in the center of God's wish to pull us towards God. He put them in the center of a story they probably never thought they'd be part of. Jesus had called the disciples out of probably seeming iniquity, that I don't really matter or count. And once he'd called them, they went on an amazing journey of healing and people seeing what they were doing, them actually having agency and change in and around where they were. But once Jesus is gone, what do they do? Even if they've seen Jesus already in the upper room, resurrected, and then this gospel passage, what came before it? Always with the Bible. I'll leave you to read that for yourselves, but the and then is really important. So even with what they've seen, experienced, touched with their hands. They don't know what to do. And for me, when I see that they go fishing, it's that they've reverted back to what they know. They've reverted back to the things that are familiar, that are easier, that maybe give them comfort. So they go fishing, but they get no fish. They pull nothing in. Even in the things of comfort, they're not getting what they think they should. And then the story goes on. Jesus says to them, throw your nets over the side, and it is filled. Because even though they've gone fishing, the Lord provides. Now, what does that look like for us to think? What is our part in God's liberating, redemptive story? What is our part in being pulled out of what we know, what we are familiar with? What is it that we're supposed to do as a community and as individuals? And how do we do that in this wonderful term, interregnum, in vacancy, in the in-between? Because I know for certain you're not supposed to stop and wait. This is my third vacancy in my time going to church. I was a PCC member and a deanery synod rep, all these wonderful titles that they give you in the Church of England, as a 20-year-old in my church in Broccoli. And I saw, as a child, the first vacancy of a leader who'd been there for 20 years, and then I saw, as an adult, the vacancy of a much-loved leader leaving the church. And we lived through it. We saw change, we had grew and we contracted, but we didn't stop doing what we were doing. And what is it that we're doing? See, when I look around, my 2 years almost that I've been here, one of the things that I see the Good Shepherd's goal as being is a place where those who have maybe struggled with church get to come. Maybe they've had some trauma in church before, maybe there's been issues, especially around sexuality, where they've been outed and left out of church. And this is a place where we say no. This is a place of where all are welcome and that God loves all. Maybe it's because they found church stuffy and straight and just full of kind of rules that nobody tells you about, that you don't know when to stand up, sit down, what the right thing to put up on the colour of the week, or whatever it is, all those things that we kind of have, that here we do some of them. We don't hold them quite as tightly. It's one of the things I've seen about this place is that actually there is a sense of integrating real life with our worship. And in some of the things I've been doing outside of the church, it's one of the things I've heard the most in the pub, the station pub, where you know I spend a lot of my time, for work purposes. Either at the open mic night or at the quiz, and Phil and John and Simon and Luke will kind of testify this, is when they realise that we're from the church, they say, but you're fun. I've never seen a vicar. They call me a vicar. No, I'm not a vicar. Never seen a vicar who has a joke. I was like, there's a few of us. We can be fun. And that's that breaking down of those stigmas, of those barriers the barriers to enter in church, but also the barriers to faith that come because people put them there. Jesus filled the net. They brought the net to shore. Jesus is constantly filling the net. We are constantly being given the opportunity to share something of God in our actions, in our lives, in our way of being that says, look, it's not so stuffy over here. It's full of love and grace and mercy and peace. And my belief is this, and I'll finish with this, is that the gospel, these books that speak of Jesus' time here, that give us an understanding of maybe part of the person of God, is liberative. It gives us liberation. It frees us from things that would pull us down. And I say this because if it didn't liberate us, it wouldn't have been redacted. There is such a thing called the slave Bible. The slave Bible is a Bible that was offered to those who were slaves as they wanted to give them Christianity. But they couldn't give them the full Bible. They couldn't give them the whole work. No way. Because it spoke of liberation fully through it. The slave Bible has 90% of the Old Testament redacted and 50% of the New Testament. Now, if the Bible, if this thing, this compendium of books of ancient wisdom, of speaking of God's story to us, wasn't liberative, didn't have liberation at its core, didn't pull us out of the things that hold us down and chain us up, why would that be the case? Why would they need to redact it? So there's something that we have that when we walk the streets, go to work, go into the laundromat, have time in Sainsbury's, whatever you do in your daily day, there's something that you have that is really important to share and to give. And even without the charismatic leader there, we still have that at our core. God provides the fish, and we pull the net in. That might have some connotations to people about evangelism. Don't get me wrong, I'm not telling you to go into Lucian Market and start shouting at people. But there's something about the way we live our lives, our behaviours, our actions, and our words that speaks of a God of liberation, of a faith that doesn't speak of rules and things that stop us doing stuff, but speaks of a heart of love, grace, and mercy, and a place of openness that's all of our requirements.